I want to start with Acts chapter 20, verses 13 through 15. You may remember where we were, Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. Paul had been in Troas. He waited for several days to have a worship service with the brethren there. He speaks for a long time, leaves on probably what would have been Monday morning around 5 a.m., 6 a.m. And you can imagine, people have had that same kind of thing. People say, I'm wound up from something. I was doing this, and it's going to take me a little while for me to unwind. Or a person has a hard day at work, and maybe they're looking forward to that extensive drive. They've got an hour home or maybe an hour and a half home, and they say, I just kind of want to process what happened during the day. And it seems like that's what Paul's doing, because he's sending some people ahead as he actually walks a distance that he could have travel by ship. Let's take a look at Acts chapter 20, verses 13 through 15. But we going before to the ship. So notice Luke is saying that there was a group of us. You know, Paul's staying behind. He's going to talk for a little while. We assume they're at Troas, but Luke and others, they went to the ship to sail for Assos. They're intending to take in Paul, for so had he appointed, intending himself to go by land. And when he met us at Assos, we took him in and came to Mytilene. And sailing from thence, we came to the We came the following day over to Chios. And the next day we touched at Samos, the same day after we came to Miletus. As you back up to verse 13 a little bit, Paul traveled by land. He was able, we would think, to walk that. He could have gotten transportation by something like a donkey. And then he's also made arrangements for the ship. We don't know exactly when Paul chartered this ship, but just like people today, you might charter a cruise. I don't think that this was anything like a cruise boat, but you might book passage on that, especially if you have multiple people. As you think about truck drivers, anybody ever know a truck driver who was always trying to pick up a load? Maybe they have a load going out, but load coming back, they're trying to make an arrangement for that. And people who have been involved with the transportation industry, you know, they know how that works. If you've got a ship, there is a crew to pay, and you've got bills to pay as far as maybe the ship payment, and you've got to keep things going. So you're always looking for cargo, you're always looking for passengers. So Paul is able to charter the ship. Ray, did you have a thought, or you just want to say that you were familiar with that? Okay, very good. The distance from Troas to Assos was only about 20 miles, so that could have been walked in 10 hours or less, so this was not something that Paul needed to walk, but that's why I mentioned earlier. It seems to me because of all the things that's taken place at Troas, because he's trying to get to Jerusalem in time for the festival that we're going to be reading about. He's thinking about the great collection. There's just a lot of things that we can imagine that would be running through his mind, so maybe that makes sense. He just and also maybe some time to pray. So this is something that he does. Had he sailed from Troas to Assos, and you may have a map there, you can see that that would have taken at least a day. So it would have been quicker by land, and that's what Paul does with that probably 10-hour or so period. Let's go back to Eutychus for just a second. We talked about the fact that he falls out of the window. I didn't give you this information last week, but I've said before at different times that the Bible is a book which is constructed where you have information where it almost begs to be checked. You have specific names, you have rulers, you have events. All of those things are historical facts that either happened or they didn't. The people either lived or they did not. Now you think about Eutychus. Do we know where that was, the city? All right, we know where it was. It was in Troas. And do we know what the event was, so to speak? All right, so we know the day. Well, maybe not the exact date in the calendar, but we know it was a Sunday. And we know that they were in a house which had the third floor, the upper story. And we know what the people were doing. We've got a basic time frame for it. All of those things are things that could be checked. Now, if you're trying to cover things up, what do you want to do with details? You bury the details. You don't give out specific information. Well, let's see. Sometime somewhere, there was this guy who fell out of a window, and what was his name? Oh, we don't remember his name. So you have all these details, which I think is one more piece of proof that Luke really did do a good job of recording things. And when he investigated his account, as we see in the book of Luke, Luke chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, he did an excellent, excellent job. All right, Paul wants to get to Jerusalem in time for Pentecost. You see that coming through in Acts chapter 20 and verse 16. There were 50 days between Passover, Acts chapter 20 and verse 6. And you've got 12 of those days as you look again at Acts chapter 20, verse 6. It already passed. Four more days as you look at verse 15 to get to Miletus. So time is marching by. I think Paul probably meets his co-workers at Assos on Monday. Likely late in the day he gets on this ship. Then he heads over to Mytilene. You would have him being there as far as sailing time in just a few hours, getting there late on Monday evening. The next stop, Chios, is going to be on Tuesday. That was the birthplace of Homer. Wednesday comes. The crew is there at Samos. That was an island about 50 miles southeast of Chios. Thursday, the group gets to Miletus. That was an ancient seaport, an important ancient seaport in the ancient world. Ephesus was only about 28 miles from that city. And Paul bypasses Ephesus, doesn't want to go there. Now, do you think Paul was not welcome in Ephesus? Remember from Acts chapter 19, where did Paul spend a couple years? Ephesus. Ephesus was a big work. But who was at Ephesus that created some problems for Paul? The tradesman. Yeah, it was Demetrius. So if he goes back there, a couple of potential problems. Number one, Demetrius and his fellow brothers might have posed some problems for Paul, and Paul's trying to get down to Jerusalem in time for this feast, and you just don't need somebody stepping all over your plan. So that was a potential problem. But if you spend a couple years in a place, you think you can just kind of duck in and out? You're going back to a place where you maybe grew up, or you spent several years and you converted a number of people, if you're looking at it from the standpoint of Christianity, or you had a number of good relationships there, what's going to happen?
They're going to invite you to dinner.
Sure, come on over. Let's have a meal together. Spend the day together. Well, you might be able to do that at a house or two, or you might be able to have a gathering and deal with some of the folks, but if you're on a time schedule, that's the last thing that you need. So Paul avoids Ephesus because that would have been, we think, a big, big problem for him. The King James has a slightly longer reading in verse 15 because of a manuscript deviation there. But again, this is kind of the basic picture. You see these stops, you can see them on the map. He's walking and still trying to get to Jerusalem in time, and every day counts. All right, that kind of brings us up to where we wanted to begin. Anything that you want to touch base on before we look at Acts chapter 20, 16 and 17? Stan?
Well, I know it's not important and you kind of skipped over, but I'm kind of curious about that manuscript difference because it seems specific. A lot of times when there's a manuscript difference, there's a word difference or there's a something that is of no consequence, but...
And tarried at Triglium?
Yeah, I'm curious about that, kind of, because of that statement.
Yeah, apparently that factored into the trip somehow. And exactly, well, assuming that you accept the manuscript variation, but assuming that you did, whether that was a problem with the ship, or maybe there was another delay there that was helpful, maybe, when you think about ships, we don't know if this was a passenger ship, or if it was a cargo ship that had been turned into a passenger ship, or maybe it was a partial passenger ship and a cargo ship. When he gets here to the area of Miletus, one of the things that's been suggested, and this is, I think, at least a reasonable possibility, Paul has a little bit of a delay. He sends for these elders at Ephesus to come see him. If he was directing the ship, and I mean, if you're paying the bill, you probably have some say over how long you spend in a port and you know, getting to Jerusalem on time. I mean, ship captain can't control the weather, but at least you can say, we need to be here by this particular day. But at the same time, you probably have the captain wanting to do as much as he can extra. That's just good business sense. And it might be that they were either taking on some cargo or they were offloading some cargo. And when you see these other ports as well, you know, he might have been able... You know, there are a lot of things that, when you think about a trip like this, that are variation. For example, let's say that the captain, I'm just giving you a wild scenario, the captain said, okay, I'll get you to Jerusalem, and it's going to be $1,500. And the captain is going, he says, well, you know, there's this port over here, and I wouldn't mind stopping, and I think it's going to work out okay. I'll knock $200 off. The trip will only be $1,300 if I can stop and pick up some extra passengers or stop and offload my cargo. And there may have been some negotiating. So when you see these extra stops, there's a lot of potential play in there, Stan, and that may be some of what's going on here. But yes, there are some manuscripts that do have that additional location. So good question. Anybody else? Okay, let's move down and pick up 16 and 17, Acts chapter 20, if you just joined us. Four, notice the statement. For Paul had determined to sail past Ephesus for the reasons, like the reasons I gave just a little bit ago, that he might not have to spend time in Asia. Well, do you think that Asia was the continent of Asia that we now think of Asia, or something else? Not our continent of Asia, but Asia in the sense of the Roman province of Asia. You can go back all the way to Acts chapter 2 and see some references to that. All right, then not spend time in Asia, for he was hastening, we'll come back to that word, if it were possible for him to be at Jerusalem by the day of Pentecost. And then from 17, as I mentioned just a moment ago, and from Miletus he sent to Ephesus and called to him the elders of the church. Well, as we go back to Acts chapter 19 and verse 10, we know that Paul spent a considerable amount of time in Ephesus, and that would have been very easy for him to have returned there and to have wrapped up an incredible amount of time. But Paul is hastening. Any of you ever see a jogger or a runner this time of year? They're kind of trying to run around the track, and you see them hastening for a while, but after a bit, they've been out jogging for a while, or after running for a while, what happens to them?
Down.
Yeah, they slow down, and maybe they slow down to a walk, or maybe they stop for a little bit. But here, the hastening is expressed with the imperfect tense. It would be like the jogger starts out jogging, there's no warm-up, and the person continues to jog until the end of the run is finished. So when you have the hastening here, this isn't he's hastening for the first part or the middle part, or people will sometimes say, we're getting close to the end, I'm about out of time, we've got to hurry up and finish this out. No. From the get-go, Paul realizes that he is on a time schedule. There is a very narrow window here to ensure that he gets there in time, that he's able to do the things as far as the trip there. All that stuff is accomplished. He wants to be where? At Jerusalem, that city, by the day of or for the feast of Pentecost. So he avoids the area of Ephesus. Let's see what else I want to give you before we get down to some information about elders. Paul, he's pressed for time. Let's move down just a little bit to Acts chapter 20, verses 29 and 30. These elders, they do come see him. We want to go back and talk about that a little bit, but let's jump ahead a little bit and see what he says in 29 and 30. He says, I know, talking to these men, that I'm going to leave. And then he says, after my departing, what kind of wolves are going to come in? They're going to be
savage.
All right, they're going to be savage. They're going to be grievous wolves. They enter in where? Among you. And they're not going to spare the flock, which refers to the church. And then verse 30, I misread that for a number of years, but he says from where? And from
your own selves.
Now for a long time, maybe you have read that and still read that as I used to. What do you think the own selves refers to?
The elders.
Yeah, I used to think the body or the church, and I think that is true in a general sense, but more specifically, I think he's talking about the eldership. You wonder if maybe as he talks to these he's thinking, maybe it's going to be you and you and you. So we don't know exactly whether these were current elders or they were going to be future elders. But Paul says from within the eldership, certainly within the body, but within the eldership, or maybe men who would become elders, we're going to have some serious problems at this congregation.
That came down from Ephesus, and that was the group that he was talking to, was the elders.
Exactly right. And he's warning them, you guys need to stay attuned to how things go in the future, because there are going to be some big, big problems. If you were today dealing with someone who was like Paul, and they said, we know some problems are going to come, so we want to see if we can get a handle on these or offer some advance help, who would people call today? Okay, I think that would be a good general answer, but let's make it more specific. People would say, we know some problems are going to happen at this congregation, so you're Paul, and you need to try to head that off as far as a potential problem or problems. So who would you call? If you're a member of the church, you might, but who else might be called? Denominational world, who do you think they'd call?
The cops.
What about the preacher? They would call the preacher down, right? Let's get the pastor down here. We'll talk to the pastor. Or maybe they'd call out the bishop if they were set up that way, or they would call out the deacons. But the writer Luke tells us that Paul called for the elders, and there was a reason for that. Back in Acts chapter 14 and verse 23, we read about elders in every church. They are the caretakers for local congregations. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 5, so it made sense for them to come. Now, I don't know exactly about the chronology, but if you think about where we are, we've talked about, I kind of sketched this out, I didn't put it on the board, but if Paul gets to this area, this stop, on Thursday, Don't know exactly what time of day he gets there. But he's got to send word to Ephesus and have these elders come over. Here's what I'm thinking. It's Thursday. You're dealing with a trip of about 30 miles. So you can't pick up the telephone. You can't send him an email. There's no way to fax him. So if you're going to get a message to those guys 30 miles away roughly, how long is it going to take you?
Oh,
you think at least a day. I mean, if you've got maybe the best runner. So what time does he get there Thursday? I don't know. But even if it's fairly early, you would think that the message is not going to get to the elders until probably Friday. Well, if you are an elder and you get this message from Paul, what do you think the message says? Come at your leisure? I'm hastening. Remember that imperfect tense verb? I'm in the area. I want to see you, and you need to come as quickly as you can. All right, you get that word as an elder, so even if you drop everything, you're now into Friday for sure. Maybe you get the message mid-afternoon Friday, late Friday. So you wrap things up, and chances are you probably leave what day?
The next morning.
Well, maybe Friday, but probably Saturday, and it's going to be a day trip. So guess what day of the week you happen to be able to be with Paul? Sunday. Isn't that interesting? Now, I wouldn't stake my life on that, but I do think that as you start looking at the sequence of events from Acts chapter 20 and verse 7 as far as Paul's departure, and you try to chart out where he happened, I don't think that's an accident. And I do think that that's very, very interesting. If you want to, and I don't know, this might vary for different people, but my thinking is to be able to have a worship service with them. And in the old days, I'll present this from a different perspective. In the old days, when preachers wanted to have a Bible study with somebody, they would try to get everybody around the kitchen table. The reason for that was the kitchen table, way back in the day, was the place where a lot of major family decisions were made. Now, the family table is used for all kinds of things other than major decisions. But if you want to convey to some people, this congregation is at risk. There are going to be some things which could be a major catastrophe here. I can see that a worship-type setting might seem to be more forceful. It might seem to be in an environment where it might make more of an impact rather than just say, hey, let's just sit around and have a cup of coffee. And by the way, there's probably going to be some false teachers come from the eldership. That, to me, doesn't sound all that serious. But if you are in a situation where it is more of a formalized Bible study or a worship service or after that, to me, that would seem to be something that might be a little more potent. Anybody have some thoughts along those lines that you want to toss out? Okay. Let's go back and see what else I want to tell you here. Why does Paul send word to the elders? Why doesn't he go himself?
He doesn't want to get
caught.
Maybe he knows stuff there. If he goes, he may as well
have won. Yeah, I'm going to have somebody here, or you can try to reword that. You're exactly right, I think, but let's see if we can rephrase that. Correct.
Time with him, and he would end up being there longer than he needed to be, so he sent for them because they're not going to stay with him in a different place and keep him off his
side. Correct. That's well stated. That's part of the answer. Anybody else? Brian?
He needs to be ready to go when the ship does.
Yeah. I mean, even if you're paying the bill, you can still have some mishaps. And then if he's the one who's going, guess who's got to come back? It's sort of round trip for Paul, and if you're hastening, that doesn't make much sense. But if you've got these guys coming, and this isn't maybe the nicest way to look at it, but if somebody's going to get stuck, no, really, if somebody's going to get stuck, is it better for Paul to get stuck or those elders to get stuck?
The elders.
Because it's going to be maybe inconvenient for them, and they may miss him, but if Paul misses the boat, so to speak, it's... You know, God can obviously work out some other things, but that was not going to be first choice. So these elders, they were in the best position to be the ones to make the trip versus Paul. And sometimes today you have to say, well, look, this person could do this. This is high risk, though, for them. It's much better for this person or this group to do it, even though it might be inconvenient, even though it might not work out. So there was, I guess, some risk that, depending on when these elders could get there, that Paul might not be there. But we believe that meeting did take place because of what we have as far as additional information. Some think that there was a congregation at Miletus. You have back in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 20 a statement about Trophas being left at Miletus sick. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he was left with sick Christians, but that could indicate that there were some congregation. There was at least a congregation there as well, maybe more. And if that's true, then that certainly would have maybe made a nice place to worship on Sunday. Once again, anything else you want to add or ask before we kind of get to where I wanted to put the meat of today's class? Okay, let's take a look at this. I'm going to take my notes over and hopefully muddle through this in a good way. Let's talk about elders. We'll put elders up here. And we're going to put a verb, a noun, and an adjective. All right, when we think about words, Steve, I'll let you serve as our illustrator here if you like. We might have a word which is used sometimes as a noun, and then we've got that same basic word, but it's used as a verb or an adjective. You want to give us an example? Anything come to mind? A word that's both a noun? It can be a noun, can be a verb.
Fish.
Okay. All right, we say fish. We might say this is a fish, and what are we saying?
It's the animal.
It's the thing. Yeah. All right? But if a person says, let's go fish, then they say, now we're talking about an activity. Now we're talking about a verb. So it's the same word, but we use it in a different way. Now, if you can bear in mind, and sometimes we've got an adjective that we use and to describe something like a noun. And when we look at elders in the New Testament, we find the same kind of thing. Let's try to use the blue here. If you ever want to show this to somebody, you can use two passages in the New Testament. You can use, I'm going to start with Peter, you can use 1 Peter chapter 5, and you can use Acts chapter 20 to show people that there are three different words in the New Testament. God uses three different words to describe elders, the people who serve in that way. There are six different English words to describe those three different Greek words. And that gets a little confusing, I know, to some people, but this is something that you can do. We've got an adjective, and let's start with that. Presbyteros. P-R-E-S-B-U-T-E-R-O-S. And with these, I'm not going to give you every place that it's used in the New Testament, but I do want to give you some key references. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 14 is one of the places where we have presbyteros. I like that verse read, but I like that verse read from the King James translation. Now, there may be some others. Gary, thank you. We'll take your hand and we'll take your help here. There may be some other translations which use this as well, but the King James is probably going to be the easiest to find it in. 1 Timothy 4:14.
Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which was given thee by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery.
All right. How often in the church have you heard about the presbytery? I can't ever remember preaching a sermon on the presbytery. I can't ever remember anybody else preaching a sermon on the presbytery. I can't remember an article that I've read on the presbytery. But all of a sudden, if you have the good old King James translation, you're reading along in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 14, and you read about the presbytery. Wow. Did that word just pop up? Anybody else turn over to that passage and have a different word? All right.
No, I was going to say the New American Standard uses presbytery.
All right. Anybody else have something different than that? 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 14. Everybody has presbytery? Well, how about that? Maybe you guys were already familiar with it. Sometimes when I use the ASV, I don't always check every other version. Well, we talk about elders, and if we have plural elders, and we do in the New Testament, every time you read about church elders, it's always expressed with a plural. All right, if you have elders, you have... Carol?
I have a question.
Okay.
If the ASV doesn't use presbytery there, what does it use?
It does.
Does it? Maybe it's been a while since I looked at that. Oh, I'm asleep today. Thank you so much to you and Teresa. Yes.
All right. My mistake. I did not get much sleep last night, so I am just not quite firing all four cylinders. So I apologize for that, but I'm just a little sluggish this morning. All right.
The English Standard Version term their elders.
In 1 Timothy 4:14? Okay, interesting. All right, if we have elders, and as I said, in the New Testament, elders is always plural. You have elders, and they form an eldership. Now, we're familiar with that. But if this word presbyteros is another word for elder, and it is, then we would expect to find in the ASV and other translations what? A presbytery. You read about the Presbyterian Church. Well, that describes a form of government. Who started to flash a hand? Okay. All right, let's go and talk about a couple of the things here. We've got Peter using that word in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 1, so let's get that up there as well. And I'd like a helper for that. Right?
The elders which are among you I exhort, who am also an elder, witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also partake of the glory that shall be.
Okay, now if you're looking at that in English, you would probably never connect there, that 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 1, that word elder, presbyteros. But it is that same word. All right, then you've got in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 2, let's go over here to our verb category. And Brian, you want to stay with us in 1 Peter chapter 5?
Be the talk of
God. Oh, wait. Just stay there for a second, if you would. Okay. Poimeno. Poimeno. All right, now we've got that word also in 1 Peter chapter 5. It's in verse 2, but it's in 2a. It's just the beginning of the verse.
Be the talk of God.
All right, fee. All right, remember what we were talking about as far as nouns and verbs? When you hear the word feed, what comes to mind? Feed is an action. So this is when we talk about elders, 1 Peter chapter 5. We've got 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 1, this adjective, presbyteros. And now in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 2, we've got this verb, which is rendered feed. And then in a few other passages, we've got this same word being used. Let's get a Revelation reader. Well, let's pick up three of them. Revelation 2, Revelation 12, Revelation 19. Revelation 2 and 27. Who wants to take that one for us? Revelation 2, verse 27. Garrett, after that, we'll take a look at Revelation 12, 5. I'll get these up on the board. Steve, and then Revelation 19, verse 15. Who wants a third one? That'll be Carol. Okay, so still sticking with this term. Revelation 2:27.
And he shall rule them. And he shall rule them with the rod of iron, as the vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father.
All right. So rule is how the word is translated there in Revelation 2:27. Let's see what we've got in Revelation chapter 12 and verse 5.
She bore a male child who was to rule all nations with the rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and his throne.
Okay, we're not talking about elders, but this is that same word there, rule. Once again, Revelation chapter 12 and verse 5. And then finally, Revelation chapter 19 and verse 15.
And from his mouth comes a sharp sword, so that with it he might smite the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron, and he treads the winepress of the fierce wrath of God the Almighty.
All right, so as we start looking at this word, which is used in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 2, feed there in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 5, first part of verse 5:2, and then we've also got it translated rule in the book of Revelation. Now, let's take a look at the noun form of the word, which is going to be poimen, P-O-I-M-E-N. We'll pick up some references here to that. That's going to be over in Brian. Let's go back to 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 2 again.
feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind.
Okay, now, here's word number three. It's rendered oversight. So we've got the adjective, and we've got a noun, and we've also got this verb. Let's talk about this noun for just a little bit more. Oversight, it's the same word that we've got in Matthew. It's used in several other places, but it's also used in Matthew chapter 9 and verse 36. Let's get a reader for that one. And in Matthew chapter 25 and verse 32. Matthew 9 and verse 36. Who wants that one? Hear it. And then Matthew 25 and verse 32. Okay. Let's pick up one more after that. And that's going to be in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11. Noun is also used there, Ephesians 4, 11. All right, back to you, Carol. Thank you. Let's go back to Matthew 9:36.
But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd.
All right, it's rendered shepherd here. Well, you can see, I think, the connection between oversight and shepherd. A shepherd is someone who's going to oversee a flock. Matthew 25 and verse 32, same word.
All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from goats.
Okay, all right. Shepherd is how it's rendered in Matthew 25 and verse 32. And then if you're looking at this word, you'd at some point come across Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 11. Let's see what we've got there.
And he gave some as apostles, and some as prophets, and some as evangelists, and some as pastors and teachers.
All right, pastor is how the word is translated in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 11. And this is, like I say, where it gets interesting, but it also seems a little confusing because you're thinking, well, look, we've got an adjective and we've got a noun and we've got a verb. That already seems a little odd. And then when you start looking at how these three different terms are rendered in different ways, feed and rule and oversee and shepherd, you're bringing out different facets or different elements of the work of an elder or a shepherd or a pastor or a bishop, all those different functions, but God has described this in all these different ways. So Peter does use all three words in one form or another in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. And if you only had the book of 1 Peter, you could say, look, these are the three words that God uses to describe elders. And 1 Peter chapter 5 is sufficient. Anything that you want to add or ask over that, Brian?
When the word is used more generically, like the elder women or the elder men, is that a different Greek word?
Presbyteros, elder appointed. Let's see if we can pull that up real quick.
Or two, by two, the elder women as mothers.
First Peter 5, 2?
First Timothy.
Some of the words are, but let's check this one real quick. A form of presbyteros is used in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 1, and the same is in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 2. So, yes.
What was the question again?
When you have, for example, this adjective, presbyteros, would you have that same word being used in a passage like 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 1? Or 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 2, where Paul talks about older men and older women? The answer to that question is yes.
And that refers to women?
Well, it is the same word, but again, when you think about this particular term, older is the basic meaning of the word. So since older is the basic meaning of the word, you could have simply an older man, someone who's never been married. Or you could have an older woman, someone who's never been married. But that word can also be applied and is also applied to elders. So, well, let's look at it this way. We need a little extra space. Biblically, are all
I'm out of ink. It's just not a good day. All right. All right. Are all older men elders?
No.
No. Are all elders older men? Well, biblically, we're talking about what's true, if it's being done correctly. All elders older men?
Yes.
Yes. So if that's true, then you would expect this adjective to be applied to them, right?
Right.
All right. Do you have some older people who are not elders? Yes. Well, then that word, that adjective, could also be applied to them just because they're older. So same word being applied, but it's being applied for different reasons. Being applied to you just because you're on the older end of the stick, being applied to you because you are older and you are an elder.
I think you could probably say the same thing of deacon with Phoebe.
Correct.
You've got the generic version of servant.
Yes.
And you've also got an elder or an office in the church that has that same word.
Absolutely right. So when you think about the word servant, everybody is a servant, but that word servant also is used sometimes in a specialized sense. All right. Anybody else?
Thank you for
all right. Well, yeah, good question. All right, we've got time to tie in Acts chapter 20. Let's do that now. That was fun. Let's see if we can make this work. Even if you can't remember all this, I do want you to come away with nothing else from today's class. I do want you to remember that Acts chapter 20 and 1 Peter chapter 5, you can, if you dig into things a little bit, show that there are three different words for elders. Apparently, God believed that this is important enough that he put it in 1 Peter chapter 5 and also put it in Acts chapter 20. So let's take a look at Acts chapter 20. Let's go back to Presbyteros, which I think is what we have over here. And let's come over here and put in Poimeno. We have that one, I think, over here. P-O-I-M-A-I-N-O. And then we had over here Episcopos. When you see Episcopos, what comes to mind?
Episcopal.
Yeah, the Episcopal Church. That's where they got the name from. Okay, let's take a look at Acts chapter 20 and verse 17. Anybody in the chapter? I want to read that for us. Benny, I think I saw you first.
From my legacy sent to Ephesus and called to the elders of the church.
All right. Elders. Now, as Paul talks about these people, and I think if you're going to try to show this to somebody, Acts chapter 20 is the easiest place to use, but just FYI, you can also use 1 Peter chapter 5. All right, these same guys are described in Acts chapter 20 and verse 28. Yeah.
Therefore, take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers.
Let's stop right there. He's made you overseers. Alright, so verse 17, Acts chapter 20, verse 28. The elders are the same people as the overseers. The overseers are the same people as the elders. Now, ready? Let's go back and have you read that verse one more time.
Therefore, take heed to yourself and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God which you purchased with his own blood.
Okay, now that says to shepherd the church. Anybody have a different translation for Acts chapter 20 and verse 28? Gary?
Feed.
Ah. Well, we've seen that word before, haven't we? There's that verb. You're shepherding, or you are feeding the church. So, Acts chapter 20 and verse 17, with Acts chapter 20 and verse 28. If you know those two verses, in fact, it might be that you want to just underline or draw some lines there as far as starting Acts 20, verse 17, and underline elder, and then go down to Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, and just find those two words, that word which is translated shepherd or feed, that's going to be the second word, and that first word is going to be something like overseer. And three different words to describe elders. And then you can build on that if the person has some additional questions or you need to, I guess, offer some additional proof. Why God offered three different words, that's his reasoning. We don't necessarily always know why God did the things that he did, but I do think that perhaps one of the reasons is that God wanted us to understand that there are some functions that are best described by multiple terms. And you think, for example, about some of the jobs that people have in life. They don't give you 22 different job titles. They just say, you know, you're the gopher, and you go for this, and you go for that. And when you think about elders, their job is multifaceted. They do a lot of different things, and God tries to give a number of different designations for that. I do think, too, that for that to be communicated in ancient times, if you couldn't identify with this one, then God said, we've got some other ones for you. When you think about elders, it's not surprising that God set up the church with them. If you go back to Exodus chapter 3 and verse 16, you find that there were the elders in Israel. You find that those men, Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 7, they sat at the city gate. Why do you think they sat there? You got these elders sitting at the city gate. Why there?
They were available.
Well, availability, city gate, that's going to be one of the places where business is transacted, a lot of people coming and going. Anything else? Well, I think there's that too. It was a place for cases to be adjudicated as well. If you had a complaint or something needed to be resolved, that was the place to go. It wasn't exactly like a court system. When you start looking at the New Testament, you find Matthew chapter 21 and verse 23, the Jewish elders, they were people who were leaders of the people. They were individuals who oftentimes opposed Jesus, and hopefully that's not what we have in today's world. All right, those are the things that I wanted to cover, especially in relation to elders. Anything that you want to add or ask before we shut things down today?